Hello, family. Hello, friends. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this Tuesday. It's the 5th of May, and it's very nice to have you with us. And I appreciate you being here. All you have to do to be a part of the conversation is email us roundtable@wamc.org. You can also just yell at your radio. That works too. We don't hear it, but you can do that.
No.
You may be doing that. That's right. I forgot. Alan has that special gene that allows him to hear it. Let me introduce our panel to you. We have a wonderful one this morning, as we always do. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, family.
And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is back. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you. And essayist, author, editor, and activist Barbara Smith joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe, and happy Cinco de Mayo.
Yes, that's right. It's the 5th of May. Thank you. It's a very nice, beautiful day and beautiful weather week we're having, so we'll enjoy it. We have a lot to talk about. Mike and I were talking about this just before we went on the air, but there are a ton of stories, and there's just a lot of news. So we'll get to as much of it as we possibly can. Let's talk about Dean Skelos. We'll start off with that because we started off with it yesterday. There have been some updates since that time. Of course, he has surrendered. And was charged. Preet Bharara had a noontime press conference yesterday, and there is an editorial in this morning's New York Times.
There's an editorial in everything.
But in the Times saying Dean Skelos must go, and so I turn to our political observer, Dr. Ellen.
One of the tabs has it: go Dean Skelos, go already. Now I'm going to be provocative, and I'm going to just say something to you, which I said to my colleagues here this morning, and they looked at me very strangely.
And the colleagues right here in this room?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I said, does anybody feel sorry for the guy? You know, I've never been a fan. I've had him on the radio here. We've had our discussions and all the rest of it. But he blocks all the socially progressive legislation that he possibly can. He's been a representative sort of the business interests as the Republican Senate quite frequently is. But I think when these guys, Shelley Silver or Dean Skelos, gets themselves into this greedy entitlement, I understand all of that. I just wonder what it's like to wake up in the morning.
Well, I mean, yes, we did talk about this before we were on air. When you do things that when you're accused of doing things that are as outrageous as it seems that he was involved with for the benefit of his son and perhaps for himself, I just don't see, yes, it is a miserable place for a human being to be, but it's not like he backed into it with his
eyes
closed.
But you reap what you sow.
Do you think that's so interesting? Do you think, Barbara and all, that they really understand because of this sense of entitlement that they feel that they're doing something wrong?
That's a good question. I have this sense that various Senate majority leaders, and there's been a few that have been in legal trouble, some convicted, some who were acquitted. But you get in these public positions of high power and you kind of rub elbows with a lot of people in the private sector who have corporate jets and huge expense accounts and other perks. And I think they begin to kind of play at that level and begin to expect that. And before you know it, they're surrounding themselves with it by bending the rules. And it's a slippery slope that they get into. I'm not, you know, Senator Skelos is insisting that he will be found not guilty, and he's asserting his innocence here. But if the charges brought against him are true, I mean, he's basically, as the U.S. attorney put it so effectively, he's been monetizing his public position for his private gain. Mm-hmm. And that's wrong, but I think it happens gradually. I think people lose perspective, and in these cases, that's often at play.
Also, to Alan's to point about, you know, do they think they know they're doing wrong? If true, and if the allegations are correct, if you have two people on the telephone saying, well, don't say anything because they're probably listening to us.
Because we know they were very specific because Preet Bharara is probably listening.
Because they know something's wrong, right? I mean, you think, like, they're careful of what they're saying because they don't want to be caught.
You know, Joe, I think it's sort of like, for these guys, three-dimensional chess. You know, in other words, yes, on one level, there's no question, be careful. And by the way, it's so interesting how the newspapers have all characterized the adjective that goes before almost every word.
There's a lot of salty language.
Yeah, it's the word you're not allowed to use on the radio.
Right. The F word.
It begins with F, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Times says expletive. Classy operation. They say expletive. And then everybody else says F, dash, 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 I-N-G. And of course, we on the radio aren't allowed to say it at all because
we can say expletive. We can say F word.
We just did.
Yes.
But I'm fascinated by the puritanical streak in the American people because by using that word, right, you get an idea of what was up, of who these guys are.
Well, the anger in their voice, but I think you're right. Three-dimensional chess. I don't think politicians necessarily in this situation regard Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, as a total white knight coming in to stop corruption. They look at him as a political adversary, and then once you put it in that perspective, you can rationalize things. Well, that's not exactly right, but they're not doing it exactly right. He's going after me, so I got to do this to protect myself. And you build walls around it, and you begin to rationalize. And again, it's a slippery slope.
I can't wait for Barbara to speak because she's been moving
nodding,
ahead.
Yeah.
No, not nodding.
Right, rolling my eyes up to the ceiling. As the only woman here today, I just feel that the way that the assumptions of what's all right when boys go out to play, no present company, of course, accepted. But do you see what I'm saying? Each of you are talking about what motivates them, what's in their mind. And, of course, for me, and I'm not just a woman, I'm a black woman, it's like if I acted like that, I would be under the jail. I mean, nobody would take me seriously, including using the F word like that. Well, do you see what I'm saying?
I understand the point, but didn't we see, what was the case in Virginia recently?
Well, Carl Hastie's mother went to jail.
There are certainly cases where women in power have also, in state government, federal government, have gone through these similar cases. I don't know that that's...
No, what I'm talking about is a general assumption of what one can get away with. I'm talking about not the people, all of these people are exceptions. The ones who have done, crime and graft and corruption in office, they're all exceptions because the vast majority of people in office across the country and across the board are not engaged in this kind of activity, I don't believe. But the thing is that I'm talking about the mentality and the assumptions of what can I get away with? And it's not just in the political realm, it's also in the business and the corporate and employment realm. What can I get away with?
Okay.
Or what can he get away with?
I see what you're saying. So
I can't because it's going to be
I'm not
read,
completely
read
sure I can say this
way
on the radio, but there's a ballsiness.
Well,
yeah, that sounds right. Play tennis like the rest of us.
Right, that's right.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was trying to get at when I said people rationalize things. They don't look at it as right or wrong. They look at it what you can get away with. Very well put. And this story, about Senator Skillis has a common denominator to the Shelley Silver story, the Speaker of the Assembly, and even the governor, Governor Cuomo, and that is this Glenwood Management Company, this real estate
firm that
is run by Leonard Litwin, the 100-year-old financier who is the largest political contributor in New York State.
Seemingly to everybody.
Yeah, he gives to everybody. Chris Bragg, who our reporter in the Capitol, has a story that kind of looks at this. And, now it looks like Charles Dorego, who's the right-hand assistant to Litwin, is cooperating with the U.S. attorney, and that's a fairly recent development. But basically, Glenwood is a big contributor to Silver, a big contributor to to Skillis, and is the biggest campaign donor through these various limited
LLCs,
corporations, yeah. LLCs, to Andrew Cuomo's reelection. You're talking millions of dollars here, and they're basically lobbying to get rent stabilization laws changed, and to get subsidies for people are buying these million-dollar condos in Manhattan, and they're paying like $16,000 a year in property taxes. I mean, there's people in Albany who are paying that much for houses in certain neighborhoods, and they're not mansions. It's it's really political influence being purchased. So it's an interesting sort of common denominator here. Lots of money going around. People are playing by the rules, they say, but the rules are unfair and unjust.
Sure. Wouldn't you invest, Mike, wouldn't you invest $1 million if you could get $50 million back for it?
Right. Return on investment. That's how they look at it, though. They're just rationalizing it, when in fact they're it's the public that's getting
screwed.
Yes. Yeah. Can I say that?
That's a permissible word.
Okay. In this context, I think it's perfectly understood. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about other issues and finish up on this one as well. We'll get to some letters. We welcome your correspondents, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, continuing the Sundays with Friends Chamber Music Series with Wendy Sutter, cellist, in the Event Gallery, Sunday, May 10th at 2 p.m., bethelwoodscenter.org for tickets. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing nature gifts, bird seed, bird feeders, and more to help create a backyard refuge. wbu.com/Saratoga Springs. Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York, locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating. ApexSolarPower.com for information. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorns Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our discussion this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. Let's get to a few letters as we talk about corruption.
Yep. Rich says the New York State 99% are tired of those who get perks, deals of the day and untold monies. And Louis the 16th lost his head over it. From the highest rank in government down to villages and school districts, there are illegalities that have been going on. All need to be found out. Why doesn't Sovereign and Skelos talk? This activity is more than business. And Irene says, what about the New York State prison system? There's more money and power than people realize. Building two in Albany, superintendents running each kingdom across the state, cronyism. Yet the beat goes on. Cutbacks and poor decision-making there has led to another New York City police officer getting killed the other day. Let's see here. Why does the press, meaning you guys, always treat a charge like it actually happened? As a law enforcement officer, I can tell you that people are charged and overcharged every single day, innocent until proven guilty, about how you come out with all the positives these people do to try to help them instead of degrade an accusation into their life as if it was real before it is proven. This picture message or video message was sent using multimedia messaging services, and we're not going to do that, of course. So if you want to tell us something, that's fine, but that's it. Okay, that's what I got.
So this little fun fact, 4 of the last 5 Senate Majority Leaders in New York State have been indicted on criminal charges.
Extraordinary.
I mean, how does that happen?
Because there is a whole class of people who literally—
How do we allow that to happen?
We don't get a choice. The system is created by those people who utilize it and who are the beneficiaries of it. So now we have an ethics law. Every time they've passed an ethics law, right? Every time they've passed an ethics law, there are enough holes in it to drive a truck through. They do that accidentally on purpose because they know what they're doing. They go into a room with Andrew Cuomo and they negotiate in such a way. And by the way, anybody who thinks that the Democrats in the New York State Assembly are the party of legislative reform are wrong, as evidenced by what's happening with Sheldon Silver. There is no question that democracy is up for sale here and that they pass bills which they can live with. So we don't have a choice. And let me tell you, Joe, nobody knows what's going on in Albany. If there's one thing I've learned about the public is nobody knows.
Well, the public isn't always interested. You say that you get fewer when we talk about state
chocolate
legislative issues. We get fewer emails than any other.
Chocolate chip cookies. Chocolate chip cookies, every one of the five lights is on during Vox Pop. Okay? Mm-hmm. He's talking about Food Friday, chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay. Now I get it.
Yeah, I didn't really know where the chocolate chip cookies
I mean, he's right. If you talk about chocolate chip cookies, people will... If you talk about...
Well, I like chocolate chip
cookies. You know, grammar, pets, whatever. Mm-hmm. That, absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And then...
But I mean, is it a symbol... Is it a signal that the public is just frustrated and they feel like they have no control? And that they just sort of shut it out because they feel disenfranchised.
Well, to me, that's the most disturbing thing is that, as you say, they don't have a choice. I mean, I wish the democracy would kick in eventually and you'd say there was something that we could do, that we had some power as voters.
It's very discouraging when Alan says that there's nothing to be done because you're the person who, has spent your life
teaching,
understanding, researching, following, covering the whole thing, and if you think there's nothing to be done...
No, I think there's plenty to be done. Mm-hmm. I just think it's frustrating that it doesn't get done.
And who will do it?
I started the Legislative Gazette. I started the first internship in the legislature. I started, all this other stuff. And the whole idea was to get people on board, to get them to see... I should say the first modern internship in the state legislature, because I don't know what came before. But I did what I could because I feel so strongly about this. But people know what their mayors are doing. They know what the mayor is doing in a way that they don't know what their state legislature is doing. Now, and there's so many games within games. For example, you know that the Assembly Democrats will pass a stunning legislative ethics reform bill every year, knowing full well that the Republicans in the Senate won't pass it. So the day that the Senate Democrats take the New York State Senate, now you have two houses. Let's see whether the Assembly does what they've been saying all along. It's a huge game.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back in just a moment. We have many, many other issues to discuss, and we will do that right after the break. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable@WAMC.org. You can also go to our website and comment on our webpage, WAMC.org/roundtable. And today's post is labeled 5/5/15, May 5th.
Cinco de Mayo.
Panel, and you can just click on that. Alan, Mike, Barbara are all here. We welcome you next. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Barbara Smith making up the panel this morning, and we have many issues to discuss, so we will get to more, and then we'll get to some more letters in just a few minutes. President Barack Obama was in New York City yesterday. He was appearing on the Late Show with David Letterman, and he was also at Lehman College. And as he reflected on the festering wounds deepened by race and grievance that have been on painful display in America's cities lately, according to the New York Times, President Obama on Monday found himself talking about a young man he had just met named Maliki. A few minutes before, in a closed-door roundtable discussion at Lehman College in the Bronx, the president...
Formerly Hunter College, I should say.
That's true.
Because I went there.
Mr. Obama had asked a group of black and Hispanic students from disadvantaged backgrounds what could be done to help them reach their goals. Several talked about counseling and guidance programs. Maliki, he just talked about, we should talk about love, Mr. Obama told a crowd afterward, drifting away from his prepared remarks, because Maliki and I share the fact that our dad wasn't around and that sometimes we wondered why he wasn't around and what had happened. But really, that's what this comes down to. Do we love these kids?
Well, Joe, I had wanted to talk about this article because the context for the president's remarks were at the launch of a new initiative in relationship to My Brother's Keeper, Keepers, which already exists. But there's now going to be a My Brother's Keeper Alliance, I believe that's what it's called. And they've raised $80 million. Their corporate titans and John Legend, music and athletes, Shaquille O'Neal, all kinds of people, mayors from some major cities, all of them are involved with continuing this initiative to save and to shore up and find opportunities for young people of young boys and men of color. And I actually attended an event at the White House, a conference in February, on behalf of the city of Albany, because Albany has signed on to the My Brother's Keeper initiative. And our My Brother's Keeper initiative, there's a name change. I won't tell you who was an advocate for that. But here in Albany, our My Brother's Keeper initiative is officially My Brother's and Sister's Keeper. And I just wanted people to know, and you know, here in the room and all of those millions who are listening, that girls and young women of color are facing issues and challenges that are part and parcel pretty much the same as those that boys and young men of color are facing. And there was so much outcry when My Brother's Keeper first came out. That would have been in the spring of 2014, last year, and our winter of 2014. There was a huge national outcry because the social scientists and the people who really know this issue know that girls and young women of color are facing, as I said, all the same kinds of issues. They're living in the same households in the poor and very economically challenged neighborhoods that the boys are. So it's just interesting to me that we are where we are with that.
Well, first of all, I agree with you. I mean, I think obviously anybody who you know, is forced into a poverty situation is you know, at risk here. But Barbara, when we look at the number of young men who are in prison, young black men who are in prison, certainly it dwarfs anything that you see with women, right?
That's not the only indicator and the only marker. Sure. I have a report here from Columbia University done by Kimberly Crenshaw. She has an institute there. She's a legal scholar, but she has an institute at Columbia where she is indeed on the faculty. That is the African American Policy Forum and the Center. Well, actually, it's the Center for Intersectionality and Social Policy Studies at Columbia. This report was done in conjunction with the African American Policy Forum, which is also one of her initiatives. And the title of the report, and it just came out a few weeks ago, Black Girls Matter, Pushed Out, Overpoliced, and Underprotected. So if you look at other indicators, not just total number of people incarcerated, but you look at school suspensions and expulsions, the kinds of disciplinary measures that black girls face, as I said, you see some really interesting statistics. And I actually have some statistics for Albany that show that this is not just, you know, a national trend or generalities.
Okay,
go
ahead.
The statistics aren't that different.
Go ahead and shock us.
Well, these are, you know, these are about students in our Albany public school system, and some of them are academic. For the English language learning proficiency rates, grades 3 through 8, black and Hispanic girls are at 10% proficiency. Black and Hispanic males are at 6% for proficiency. That's a 4% difference. For math, girls are at 7% proficiency. Boys are at 6%. That's a 1% difference. We're not seeing huge, huge, huge differentials. There's something called Vader offenses, which is the very serious and violent disciplinary issues that happen in schools. For black and Hispanic females, there are 533 offenders, with the total number being 1,588. For black males, it's 878. But then when you compare black girls to white girls, you see, again, a huge, huge differential.
So what do you take away from that particular statistic you just gave us?
The one about the serious
the black girls, that's right, compared to white girls.
That some of the same social forces that are getting kids identified as their kids in pre-K were getting expelled from pre-Ks, and they are disproportionately black kids. What do you do in a pre-K classroom that rises to the level of expulsion?
Well, let's say you try to strangle the kid sitting next to you.
Well, obviously, you know.
Would you
handcuff the child who did that?
But these are kids who are 4 years old.
No, I hear you.
You need to try something a little more creative.
Well, I think Barbara's point, and it always comes back to this, is if you give everybody a level playing field from the very beginning, if you do pre-K, if you make sure that everybody has a standard of living that is acceptable, if you don't force them into poverty, then you're going to get less acting out. I think.
And they're
that's
prepared
the point.
To be in a school
yes.
setting because.
That's right.
From the day they got here, everyone around them was talking about when you go to school, X, Y, and Z will happen and how wonderful it's going to be. But as I said, to me, the disproportion is like what's bad behavior is what we were talking about in the first block. We were talking about what people can get away with depending upon their racial and gender identity and privilege versus what some other people can get away with are not.
Well,
so.
You know, Barbara, I'm sorry to keep going back to this, but you, as they say on Law and Order, you open the door.
Uh-oh.
No.
Where's the music?
No. Boing. No. But I think you're right. But if you take a look, for example, at politicians, you'll see white politicians, black politicians going to jail, all of whom have the sense of entitlement. So I take it you have an answer to that? In other words,
in addition to race, it's poverty too. I mean, poverty
is a common
denominator for failure in the school system, and any program.
No,
needs
it's
to
a given.
That.
It's a given. I accept that. But when you see Malcolm Smith, a black man to this moment, tried to bribe his way onto the Republican ballot, one of the most creative things I have, and crazy things I've seen, and is sentenced, is going to jail during that. I think by the time they get up to the majors, or maybe the minors, in the state legislature, that there's a sense that is encompassing for everybody.
Yeah, what I was trying to talk about is perception of wrong. That's what I was talking about. Like, how are people viewed if indeed they do something wrong all the way along the continuum from pre-K until adulthood? Do you see what I'm saying?
And I'm not sure.
I have to say, all I can tell you, Alan, as a black person,
yes,
I know that there are certain things that if I do them, I don't get viewed the same way that if my counterpart,
absolutely true,
white person.
Yeah.
So the thing is, me getting followed around a hardware store, back in my Boston days, this was the 1970s, all I wanted was a clothes rack, you know, that you can dry laundry on. That's what I was in the store for. I was followed around the store. Why? As I said, there are things that happen. And as I said, in school settings, which is where children spend their time, a lot of their institutional time, in school settings, the perception of black and Latino children is that they're doing worse when they are doing behavior that is same or similar to their white counterparts.
I want to go back to Mike's question. So you're right. So what's the fix?
I think that with all the events that we've been seeing recently, particularly with Baltimore exploding last week, not to nearly the same degree as cities exploded during the 1960s. That's a point that needs to be made. It was minuscule in comparison with the scope of urban unrest during those years, which, of course, a few of us lived through.
No, that's true. But I asked you a specific question.
No, I know you did. But what I'm trying to say is that we see that we have these intractable problems that are based in social, economic, and racial disparity and injustice. And I was really interested to see the incredibly insightful things that people who live in Baltimore were saying about how to solve the problem. I was also concerned to see that when elected officials spoke, and they were speaking insightfully too, we haven't figured it out yet. We have not figured it out yet. As I said, the Harlem Children's Zone for me, that's a great model.
And that's an approach where you support the child outside the school, the whole family. Basically,
sure.
it's a full support system. And that seems to make a difference. It's been successful in the Harlem Project.
Yeah. Right. The problem is that it's extremely cash intensive.
Right. But
it's very hard.
But what's the alternative? It's more expensive. You know,
right. Well, the alternative is more expensive. And the thing is, there is an effort on the part of the Obama administration with Promised Neighborhoods to try to replicate the results, the positive results of the Harlem Children's Zone around issues of poverty across the nation through funding. There are 20 Promised Neighborhoods around the country.
Well, Michael has a question for you. Is Barbara implying that white girls are committing the same amount of offenses and not being punished for it?
These statistics don't say that to me. That's not what I'm talking about. What's the perception of, as I said, of wrongdoing?
Well, not this, Michael. I'm sorry. I just there's a letter writer, Michael.
Right, yeah. Right, indeed. No, I'm not saying that they're doing the same amount. I'm not implying that they are. I don't think these statistics bear that out.
I want to change the subject, but just slightly, and then we'll go to a break. But there's also a new poll out today from the New York Times and the CBS News organization, saying that public perceptions of race relations in America have grown substantially more negative in the aftermath of the death of a young black man who was injured while in police custody in Baltimore and the subsequent unrest, far eclipsing the sentiment recorded in the wake of the turmoil in Ferguson, Missouri last summer, which Barbara alluded to a moment ago. 61% of Americans now say race relations in this country are generally bad. That figure is up sharply from 44% after the fatal police shooting of Michael Brown and the unrest that followed in Ferguson in August, and 43% in December. What do those numbers tell us? Because they seem kind of fickle.
Well,
everybody's looking at everybody else here.
It's a snapshot. And certainly, you know, when you take a survey and how close it is to a news event, that certainly, you know, tempers the results. But
it is interesting that there's more of a response to Baltimore than there was to a response to Ferguson.
And maybe that's because of the immediate aftermath and the violence that ensued. Maybe it brought back the notion of the 60s when I think people generally accepted that race relations were, problematic. And people may have had the perception that it was much better. You know, I've heard people say, well, we've elected a black president. That proves it. We're kind of past that. Well, we're not past it. And that's what Ferguson and that's what Baltimore remind us. We have a lot of work to do still. And that's probably what the poll reflects.
I think part of this is the specifics of these cases. If you see the Eric Garner case, that's his name, right? Eric Garner
in
Staten Island?
Yeah. Staten Island. That was outrageous. And I don't think there's anything...
Captured on video.
Yeah. I don't think there's anybody who can't see it as having been...
Except for the grand jury.
Outrageous. Well, that's right. Well, that's right. And that is a reflection, by the way, of what Michael, our Michael here, is saying, because there is this conundrum of race relations in which the teams are divided up, and it all comes down to a sense of, and Barbara, I'd be very interested in what you have to say about this, a sense of threat on both sides. In other words, you get a white affluent community. And they run the hardware store that you're talking about.
I think it was like a working class, lower middle class person who owned that hardware store.
Who, by the way,
it's not a chain.
But Barbara, who usually are the most threatened of all, the people who are on the fault line,
right?
Where that happens. So, what is it that creates that fault line? What is it that creates this sense of fear on both sides?
Well, there's such a history. I mean, we've only had desegregation for about the past 40 plus, or maybe at the outside 50 years. I mean, Selma was 50 Somewhere years ago. Right. Obviously, desegregation had not taken, so to speak, at that point. So, as I said, with less than 40 years of history of people of different ethnic and racial groups actually having level eye-to-eye kinds of relationships with each other, it's short. I mean, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of years of both of racial oppression, racial separation, and also an incredible ideological machine to make sure that those who were on top kept that position. And a part of it was us done through massive fear, instilling fear. And the thing is, with people in contemporary times, right now today, people of color living in generally inner city communities where relationships, particularly with the police, but with also other institutions, are by and large negative for them. I'm not talking about my experience. I'm talking about the general experience. It continues to those flames continue to be fanned. It's very difficult.
We do have to take a break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Tutoring Upgrades, Poughkeepsie, offering private tutoring and small group review classes for the June New York State Regents tests. Enrolling now, tutoringupgrades.com. Evoke Style in Stuyvesant Plaza presenting their new shoe salon featuring women's footwear with a range of styles and sizes. EvokeStyle.com. And Albany Symphony presenting the 14th annual American Music Festival featuring Michael Doherty's Trail of Tears Concerto with Amy Porter and more, May 14th through May 16th at MPAC. AlbanySymphony.com for tickets.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion this morning. And it's been a very busy hour, so we have just a few minutes and probably a lot more to talk about. Alan, any letters you want to get to?
Well, there are. Jack says, what our police culture, and police is in quotes, has wrought on our communities truly awful needs to stop. What our civilian culture has wrought on poor and disadvantaged is also awful and needs to be completely revamped. And I wonder if you could address the well-documented fact that unfair imprisoning, notwithstanding, the majority of deaths of young black men is at the hands of other black men, some young and some not too young. How are we going to address this? Well, there is no question that there's a huge amount of crime within inner city communities.
Disproportionate, I would say.
Yeah, we know that. Mm-hmm. And so, Barbara, do you want to answer that question?
I really, I have real issues with having the counter argument to police brutality being, but there's black on black crime. Most crimes happen within one's racial ethnic group. So I don't see one as being the counterbalance to the other because they're both serious problems. The police are an institution constituted to serve all of society, and they need, when they do not, they need to rise to that charge, and they generally, as I said, I find that they generally have and do. Most people would agree that they function up to that level. But we have so many examples now that have been previously hidden because we didn't have the video of
right.
them. We have so many examples now of when they're not doing what they're supposed to do and they are off the rails, extrajudicial killings, etc. And as I said, I don't see, those are not the same. Those are apples and pears as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to go back to Skelos for a minute, only for a second, because there's an interesting letter from Ashley who says, the fact that Skelos isn't stepping down as majority leader showcases how little he and his colleagues care about conducting their business above board. They feel entitled to kickbacks, quid pro quo, and unchecked power. I'd say vote them all out, but we haven't done that yet. And why will we now? Well, because, first of all, he is innocent until proven guilty.
Well, that's what his conference said. They believe strongly in the notion of innocence to proven guilty. But not all. It wasn't unanimous. They didn't take a vote.
No, there were several
consensus.
People who took shots.
You know, even the Senator Amador from this capital region was questioning whether he said he wanted to hear what he said, but he was questioning whether he could lead. I still think the jury is out. He may need to step aside.
Well, the same thing happened with Silver.
Yeah. He tried to do it and realized
first
he didn't
they
have
tried. They weren't going to make it. Yeah. That's right. But I also say if you voted them all out, I've always said this to my students. If in fact you get in, will you behave like they? They said absolutely not. And I always say, are you sure? I mean, once those entitlements are there, are you sure you won't behave that way? I would just say, if you get a whole new crew in, I think you'd see some of the same behavior replicated. It's human nature, I'm afraid. Mel says, "Why don't we have a discussion on speech and many blacks?" I'm not going to read that.
Yeah, I don't want that.
I'm not going to read that. It's ridiculous. Hi, Roundtable team. Great discussion. Barbara Smith is absolutely on point. Ryan says, I have a question for Barbara. I am a new white teacher in a middle school, predominantly African-American and Hispanic. How do I stress the balance between the idea that, yes, people of minority status are facing prejudice and an uphill battle, while pointing out that they should see themselves as having a choice in how they live their lives? Gang members versus upstanding citizen, for example. And I would add on to that, Barbara, look at you. You've done a magnificent thing with your life. So that's his question.
How do you get children to believe that they can succeed and have opportunity?
Yeah.
I think by conveying that with every single thing that you do. You treat all your children equally. I don't know. She mentioned, I'm making an assumption.
Yeah.
He or she mentions that they're black and Hispanic children. I don't know if they're white children and Asian American children and immigrant children. But as I said, all of them get treated the same way. And also, I think it's important if he or she is a white teacher to bring in role models so that they really can believe that they can do it.
Good point.
So and those, you know, I'm sure they're role models and mentors.
What? You?
Mentors.
You.
I'm not necessarily a role model.
Yes, you are.
Or a mentor. No, let me finish the sentence, Alan. I'm not necessarily a role model or a mentor for teenagers. You know, I've worked with teenagers. I've worked with elementary school children, but I do believe that it's great for them to know about their elders. It's also good for them to meet people who are like just a few years older than they are, like high school students interacting with elementary school students. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Get the best person for the job.
Gotcha. Philip says, Dear Roundtable, what a terrific discussion this morning about the corruption in New York State politics. Roundtable keeps getting better and better.
But we feel good about that.
Yay. Yeah.
Fist bump.
Yeah.
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 Is that it?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Because I can move on to the thing. Well, we're almost out of time.
Okay, that's that for now. Oh, yes. We have to talk about...
Yes, the lockbox.
Oh, my God. Because, you know, somebody writes in and says, this roundtable program is terrific, and I do believe it. I think it's great. I think it's a tribute to Joe and to the people who are sitting around this table right now. But we couldn't have any of it without everybody understanding that in this society, the way we do it, we're not going to charge you $6 on Sunday for the New York Times. We're going to say, put the $6 into the lockbox or many times that, whatever you can do, so that we can really continue to carry this on. Now, I don't think, you know, anybody should see that I am not, I am passionate about it because I simply understand it as I know you who are listening to the radio right now understand that unless everybody does something, this is going to be a fragile experiment that goes the way of other fragile experiments. So just go to lockbox at WAMC.org and put something in.
That's all you have to do. It's WAMC.org, WAMC.org. $125, and you get a really cool water bottle. Mike is showing it to the camera right now. It is
a
stainless steel water bottle, and you can put your name on it.
Yeah, you can put a little two-word something in.
That's right. Yeah. We have one that says could be worse. We're out of time. We want to thank everybody for being a part. Again, roundtable at WAMC.org.